Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 31st, 2020. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live depths from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal, the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Parton, or Digby, from the blog Hullabaloo will be joining us. Also on the program, from the David Feldman Show, David Feldman himself will be here. Meanwhile, Donald Trump's all in on his operation to delegitimize the election. Republican Senate adjourns without touching federal unemployment benefits, which are set to end today. The Department of Homeland Security is compiling dossiers on journalists. Obama and Sanders come out with support for ending the filibuster. Meanwhile, with almost a third of the country covered underwater, Bangladesh suffers massive flooding, millions left with literally nothing. The full court of appeals will, the DC Circuit full court of appeals to review the DOJ's attempts to drop charges against Michael Flynn. Kamala Harris's record of defying the U.S. Supreme Court's orders to release nonviolent prisoners in overcrowded prisons in California put her VP chances on shaky ground. Meanwhile, Bolivians protest against their right-wing coup government's attempts to delay elections. And a new report, Jared Kushner quashed a national testing plan because he thought COVID was only hitting blue states. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, folks. Thanks for joining us. It is Friday. It's Casual Friday. I am wearing my soft collared shirt. I was going to say basically the soft collared shirt I have. I realized this morning I wear this shirt almost every Friday, but I like it. It's comfortable. It is collared. It buttons up. And it's soft, so I'm going to wear that. Thank you for joining us. Got a lot of notes of appreciation about yesterday's show. Jamie, Matt, and Matt. People really appreciated the work yesterday. Always worried about crossing the two mats because you're crossing the temporal plane with old Matt and new Matt. But fortunately, nothing went wrong from a physics standpoint. That can be
space-time is intact.
Yeah. I mean, apparently, like, there's a chance, right, for, like, you open up some type of black hole and everybody gets sucked into it or something to that effect. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but antimatter and matter, when they hit, something along those lines.
CERN was watching very closely yesterday.
Speaking of which... a science question. I just want to get this out of the way. The other day, I read from a YouTube comment regarding the relative size of a coronavirus molecule, I guess, and a CO2 molecule. And I failed, even though I I made a point of making sure that I did, and I, of course, apparently I did not, inciting who it was that left that comment. It was Timothy Halvorsson. And I also, apparently, I failed to call him a genius. So, but I, at the very least, will cite his name. I can't, I'm just not going to go on record saying that he's a genius. But so I do appreciate that. Also, just a reminder, this program relies on your support. You can support this program by becoming a member. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, we now have merch. You can go to shop.majorityreportradio.com to check out the merch. And as always, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. There is a lot in the news today, and none of it particularly good for the Republicans, which makes me happy. Let's go into this, however, because it is, and maybe we'll talk maybe a little bit about this with Digby. The Trump campaign has suspended its ad buys, and they are supposedly going to be retooling things. It's going to be interesting to see which direction that heads into. I don't know that there's much to be salvaged at this point for the Trump campaign. I think they are instead going to reorient themselves, it would appear, to really fundamentally attacking the legitimacy of the election in some fashion. Now, the other thing that is sort of interesting is that there's apparently like $170 million that is sort of unaccounted for in their campaign. There are charges, or I should say, violations being filed with the FEC. But you'll recall, I think it was about a month ago, one of the Republican commissioners resigned. And when she did, she, this is the Federal Elections Commission, when she did, she basically rendered the commission inoperable because you need at least four commissioners on there, or five. And I think there's only four now. I'll double check that. But it is inoperative. Let's put it that way. And so, you know, there's a quality of like, rev up the getaway car, but who knows? The only reason why also I think this is going to be the concerted push is that, you know, the is because that's what Fox and Friends is talking about. Here's Brian Kilmeade, who is on Fox News, on Fox and Friends, arguing that, of course, he's parroting what Bill Barr said this week, which was, it's only common sense that will tell you that foreign adversaries could use mail-in ballots as a way of throwing the election.
Just use logic. Don't wait for CBS to do a report which ended up proving that Trump was right. Just use logic. You sit in your house, there's five ballots on your, for your family, three of your kids, 18 to 21. I'm not going to vote. You could vote for me. You could send it in. When I get around to doing it, you click the box. A domineering parent tells the kids how they're going to vote, or some kids will grab their parents' ballot and send it. Can't we just have this one moment to vote for one candidate every 4 years and show up and put a ballot in without licking an envelope or pressing on a stamp? If you can shop for food, if you can buy liquor, you can vote once every 4 years.
It's so true. How many shared civic moments do we have in this country?
None.
Right now, where
no. Every 4 years.
Every 4 years, one time.
Oh,
that's
my
all.
God.
Just one thing. Can
oh,
we come
God.
Together?
Oh, positive.
Do it responsibly.
Wait. We need to deal with the first part before we get on to their lamentation that there are no shared civic moments in this country, like standing in line for multiple hours because the Republican Secretary of State has closed 90% of the polling places. That's what they're talking about, of course. But contemplate what Kilmeade is saying here. Use logic. If you vote there, you're going to have God knows how many households with multiple children over the age of 18, right? They're with their parents, multiple children over the age of 18 who are at home getting their ballots, who don't care about voting. They registered. They don't care about voting. Parents who are so gung-ho to vote are going to actually write in their ballots, going to sign their ballots, or maybe the kids will come and sign it because they don't care. Do we really think this is a major problem in this country?
I was going to say, one of those examples where it's just like your friend turns your ballot in for you, like, okay, sure, I'm fine with that.
I mean, or what, like, these kids, so what's the idea that we just don't, these kids wouldn't vote? In Kilmeade's mind, these kids who live at home, they're over 18. They're not
kids. Over 18. Yeah.
So there's multiple kids living in the home, multiple adults living in the home who are children of the parents. They're over the age of 18 now, right? So in presuming that, you know, unless they're twins, one could be like 18 in a week.
Oh, man. This makes me want to watch Step Brothers.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing you have to really worry about is families where you have like a Brady Bunch situation. Because then you could have like you could have in, you know, two 18-year-olds, two 19-year-olds, two 20-year-olds.
Oof.
And you could have like if you
think about the voter fraud.
Kids, and then, you know, the Brady parents would force their kids and or fill out their ballots, then you'd have two people with access to six ballots.
Damn.
That is, we got to watch out for that. But wait a sec. Let's get back to the other part where these guys who would never, ever, ever in a million years call for voting election day to be a national holiday are still going to lament the fact that we don't have a shared civic day together.
Years.
It's so true. How many shared civic moments do we have in this country?
None.
Right now, where we
every 4 years.
Every 4 years, one time. That's all. Just one thing. Can we come together, do it responsibly? If you need to request an absentee ballot, as the president made very clear, that's what he's talking about. I messed up my ballot in the New Jersey primary this year. I lost the secure envelope inside it. So I had to go in and vote provisionally, which means my vote didn't even count unless they needed
unless they
it.
Need it yeah.
What a mess if that's nationwide as they push ballots out to these voter rolls, many of which are outdated anyway.
Well,
incidentally, that guy doesn't believe in washing hands. I don't know if people remember that, but he doesn't. He literally does not believe in washing hands. He doesn't believe that germs exist because he can't see them or something. I'm not making that up. That was something he very proudly was talking about a year ago. So because he's irresponsible with his ballot, he thinks everyone will be. I really love the fact that they're now lamenting a shared civic moment.
How about we make a day? Yeah, exactly.
Holiday for elections.
For civic moments.
Yes.
Let's make more holidays for civic moments.
I was going to say, maybe we should make the work day just like 6.5 hours. So we each get like an hour and a half long civic moment.
Yeah. Or like even like a 4 day work where we can have a civic Friday.
Civic Fridays. TGICF. Well, all right, it's not going to catch on, folks.
New merch.
A word from our sponsors. We are sponsored by Sunset Lake CBD. They are a family-owned farm that was producing milk for Ben and Jerry's. And then they decided to diversify. They're growing hemp 100% pesticide free. They only use organic fertilizers. You can go and you can check their purity tests. They have a documentation on their sites. All the stuff is certified. They work with the University of Vermont to implement regenerative agricultural practices. They pay a minimum of $15 an hour to all of their employees. The company is majority owned by employees. And their CBD has turned at least two of us on this program from skeptics into true believers. I'm not a big smoker of CBD. I have used now the tincture for sleeping. I have used it on eczema that I've gotten on my hands, on my ankles. A buddy of mine had shingles. I sent him the salve. He loved it. My daughter had, I'm not going to go into the details, but I use the tincture topically. I'm only telling you what my experience has been with it. I think you're supposed to ingest it. And I do to go to sleep, but I'm using it topically on things and it's working. As like, I guess an analgesia, I don't know what they call it. But they also have gummy bears that deliver 1,000 milligrams. Is that it? Of CBD. Those are delicious. Too delicious. They have CBD coffee, infused coffee. And then they have smokables that Matt, who was a CBD smokable skeptic, is now a former skeptic.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a big fan of these smalls, which come in nice little nuggets that you can put in your grinder. Also, they sent me this giant CBD, I don't even know what to call it, joint. And I wasn't sure when I was going to ever smoke it, but I took up to Massachusetts this weekend, and you can see kind of how much I smoked of it.
Good job.
And I felt very relaxed. So yeah. I don't know if this is one of their normal product lines, but I appreciate them sending it to me. And it was an interesting experience. So
they are fans of the show. You can go and use the code Left is Best. One word, Left is Best. Get 20% off. All of the if you purchase now, today, July, they are donating 4.20% of all online sales to the Drug Policy Alliance, whose mission is to advance policies and attitudes that best reduce the harms of drug use and drug prohibition. So it's a 4.20% during the month of July. So you can check that out for today anyways. I don't know if they're going to extend that, but check it out. SunsetLakeCBD.com. We'll put the link in our podcast description. Also, as you know, there's never a bad time to learn something new, but sometimes you don't have enough time. My recommendation to deal with both of those things, Blinkist. It's an app that goes on your iPad, your iPhone, or your Android pad or Android phone, your computer. It takes the key insights of over 3,000 nonfiction bestsellers in over 27 categories and condenses them down into blinks, which you can read or listen to in 15 minutes. Blinkist also offers its member exclusive original podcasts from top authors and creative thinkers. You can dive deeper into full-length nonfiction audiobooks at a special discounted price. Over 14 million people have been using Blinkist to deepen their knowledge about topics spanning from self-improvement, management, entrepreneurship, happiness, but things like history and politics as well. For me, what I find is the best thing about Blinkist is that there are titles of books that I feel like I should have a sense of what they are about, but I don't necessarily want to read them the entire book. I'm sorry to those authors. That's just the case. I'm a jerk. There are other books too, where it's like, I don't need to read the prose of somebody who's telling me how to, you know, be more efficient with my time, let's say. In fact, I mean, if you're going to be efficient with your time, the best way to read a book about that or to listen to one is with Blinkist. So for instance, why we sleep. I would like to know. What is important about the idea of why we sleep? So I'm going to check out Matthew Walker's Blinkist. I'm not going to read the whole book. I'm sorry, Mr. Walker, but I will check out Blinkist to get the key points of why we sleep. Maybe you haven't read Rachel Maddow's book, Blowout. Maybe you don't want to, but you want to get a sense of what she's talking about. Blinkist. It's the perfect way to do it. So right now, Blinkist has a special offer for just our audience. You go to Blinkist.com/majority report, start your 7-day free trial. You get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership and up to 65% off of audiobooks. Yours to keep forever, Matt Leck. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/majority report to get 25% off a premium membership and a 7-day free trial to see if you like it. Blinkist.com/majority report. Again, we'll put that link in our podcast description. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Digby. We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome back to the program the proprietor of the blog Hullabaloo and the columnist at Salon.com, Heather Digby Parton. Heather, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Sam. It's been a while. I'm glad to be here.
It has indeed. So, what's that?
You want the song?
Oh gosh, I forgot. It's been that long, but this thing still works.
Are you ready for some pee-pee? Yeah. Are you ready for some pee-pee? Yeah. And a bit of hullabaloo, a bit of hullabaloo should do ya. How about some hullabaloo? Just rub it on ya.
That's good. Does that song say rub it on you?
I think it's so good for you.
I didn't pick that up before. Heather, thanks for joining
us. I'm good with that. I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Yes. So, all right, let's get into this. It is a pretty crazy news day, even for this era. And I know you've written this week about Bill Barr and about where we are in terms of COVID. I mean, we had multiple right wing, I guess, I don't know, luminaries die this week of COVID-19. Montgomery, the co-founder of Turning Points USA, an organization which was putting out anti-mask rhetoric as recently as 3 days ago. Montgomery died 2 days ago. Herman Cain died. He was putting out anti-mask tweets and whatnot right before he caught COVID-19. Neither one of these guys were prominent enough in my mind for me to, celebrate, because I don't want to come off as I'm, sort of above that. If I think someone is really damaging to the country, I am happy to acknowledge that I think that the world is a better place without them. On some level, but neither one of them sort of reached that level. They're not like Antonin Scalia, who had, a lot of things control over. But it does set a certain, it sort of sets the table in a certain way. Like I'm reading, there were these quotes from Political Playbook. For like what's going on in Republican offices? I don't know if you saw this, but they were crazy.
I did.
And I wanted to read a couple of these. From a scheduler to a House Republican member, our office has been required to be fully staffed since session resumed at end of June, including an intern. While mask use isn't banned, it's also not encouraged and has been derided on several occasions by the chief of staff and the Congress member. Oh, Louis Gohmert also had it this week, and we'll find out in a couple of days if he infected other people. From an aide to a Republican member who had COVID, I'm obviously not allowed to speak on behalf of anyone, but it may be worth looking into how many Republican offices are also requiring all staff and interns to come in while taking no precautions. Ridiculing people for wearing masks is also not uncommon. I think you'd find a lot of offices in the anti-mask brigade are forcing staff to report to work, even if they have legitimate concerns about their health. I'm sure you could also find some are having staff travel districts in high-risk areas and not providing for quarantine afterwards. There's a general fear that saying anything critical of the current policy or lack of policy will lead to retaliation. That's cancel culture. But we don't hear much about that. Just give me your sense of where we are, I guess, from a political standpoint on this COVID stuff.
Well, it seemed for a while. I think, that when that latest round of really bad polling came out and Trump ended up firing, demoting Brad Parscale, his campaign manager, and they, promoted, I can't remember the guy's name.
Stepien, Bill Stepien.
Manager, and Kellyanne Conway. Yeah, Stepien. Right, Chris Christie's former guy. Kellyanne Conway came out and said, well, we think it's a great idea. The president needs to be speaking out more about the virus, and he's got to be more involved. And the consensus was that they kind of understood that this thing had really gone sideways and that it was really bad, and they were going to need to step it up because Trump was suffering in the polls almost, you know, for two reasons. Well, for many reasons, but the one that had really sunk his poll numbers were a combination of his terrible response to the coronavirus crisis and also his, you know, completely, you know, insane reaction to the Black Lives Matter protests. So they figured they had to come out and do something with the virus. And particularly they found out that it was reported just this week that when they presented him evidence that it was actually killing his own voters, that's kind of, he sort of responded to that and said, well, gee, maybe I better not do
that's
that.
Bad,
you know, maybe
right?
I better do something about this.
That's bad.
So in any case, there was this idea that, I'm sorry, what?
That's bad, right? Killing my own voters. That's bad.
Yeah. I would have thought that would be something that could have occurred to him earlier, particularly with the age group that had been most affected by the death toll. But, you know, hey, apparently they had to go and show him some numbers, and then suddenly he realized that maybe killing his own voters wasn't a great idea. But in any case, what we thought was is that there was a readjustment just based on, you know, just rank, cynical, political, you know, motives that they were going to have to do something about this. So, you know, I really kind of thought, well, maybe they recognize that they, you know, Florida is, you know, it's dying. I mean, the place is just, it is on fire with COVID right now. Maybe they'll do something. Well, they decided to do those, you know, the new coronavirus briefings, the sort of resurgence of those. And he came out, and at first they, you know, we thought, okay, so he's going to read some stuff that was clearly written by someone else, and he woodenly recite it like he's, you know, reciting somebody else's book report. And then he would take questions from the press, which, you know, sort of was what got him into trouble the last time. So he did. And I kind of thought, well, maybe he'll do it now. Of course, he screwed up from the beginning. They asked him about, some reporter asked him about Ghislaine Maxwell. And he said, well, I wish her well. I've known her for years. You know, we were neighbors in Palm Beach. And I really wish her well. I mean, she is an accused underage sex trafficker. So, you know, that didn't go over very well. And that was one thing that got him into trouble. And then subsequent to that, it seems like the whole thing's fallen apart. And they're just now, he's out there pimping hydroxychloroquine again. He's talking about these quack doctors who are out there pushing it, one of whom is a real crackpot who's, you know, was out there, who's apparently been saying that, you know, women are infected with demon seed and the alien and doctors are putting alien DNA in their patients and just a bunch of really crazy stuff. And he was saying he found her very impressive.
Well, I got to admit too. I got to admit too, as a doctor, I find that very impressive when you have evidence of alien DNA in medicine and can attribute all sorts of maladies to sleeping with demons or witches. I find that impressive. Maybe in a different way, probably, than the president does.
Well, I mean, this is where we're. So we're really right back where we were as far as the president taking charge of the COVID crisis. And, you know, it's as bad as it was back when he was saying that he wanted his scientists to look into whether or not, you know, we should inject disinfectant because it works so well on countertops. Why not on people? I mean, this is, so they can't do anything about him. I guess my point is that they, as much as they tried to sort of do some kind of a pivot, it didn't really work, at least in terms of the coronavirus. So you see this stuff. Now let's take, you know, you mentioned Gohmert and you mentioned Herman Cain. His national security advisor came down with it this week also. And here's the thing about, he got it. He tested positive. He'd been running all over Europe without wearing a mask. I'm not sure why they let him. Apparently they had some sort of assurance over in Europe that he didn't have it. And then that turns out that he may have had it. He came back home, he got tested, he got it, and he's actually feeling symptoms apparently. He's been at home, so he's not one of those asymptomatic, you know, I tested positive but I didn't feel anything. And we don't really know what his status is at the moment. But he didn't tell his staff. he didn't mention it. It's just like what you say about the Congress. They got, when Gohmert tested positive, he was getting on the plane with Trump, by the way. He was getting ready to get on Air Force One, and they tested him because Trump was going to Texas for a fundraiser, and they found out he had it. So what did he do? He didn't go home. He went back to the office, and he filmed a maskless, you know, video in which he, you know, indicated he thought maybe he got it from wearing the mask, another one of these right-wing tropes. And that's when the flood of all these staff members came in to Politico, where they were saying, look, this is really bad, because, you know, Gohmert knew he had it, and he went back to the office and, you know, basically exposed everybody in the office to it. The same thing happened with Robert O'Brien, the guy in the White House, the National Security Advisor, who didn't tell his staff that he tested positive. So, you know, the upshot is that these people still, after all we've seen, after all we know, after the numbers have gone crazy, the death rate is skyrocketing again, they still don't take it seriously. And I don't, you know, Trump even said yesterday at his briefing, pretty much indicated that he still thinks it's a Democratic hoax. He said, hey, on November 4th, you know, believe me, on November 4th, they'll reopen the country the day after the election. If they win, they'll be reopening, you know, pretty clearly thinking that there's nothing to this. So I don't know, you know, I have very little hope at this point that they're going to do anything about this, that there's any hope for any kind of a strategy beyond just, you know, grinding it out and getting through it until the first of the year. What are they going to do? What in great moment of what epiphany are these people going to have when it's even in the White House, when the National Security Advisor has it, when Herman Cain dies of it, you know, who pretty clearly, I mean, I think there's a lot of evidence he got it at that rally. Other people did. The public health officer in Tulsa said that the rally spread the virus. And, you know, here we are, you know, with just one, you know, we're just taking one day after another having to deal with this thing as it now Deborah Burke said that it's, you know, it's working its way up the country. It's going to Tennessee now. It's going to Kentucky, Ohio Valley. They're watching it happen, and nothing is being done. And, you know, you put this on top of the news that we got last night from this Vanity Fair article that Jared and his whiz kids, who, remember, they were running a separate coronavirus task force on a different track than the official one throughout the spring. I don't even know if it still exists, but it did at the time, where he was interfering in all kinds of stuff. But apparently their whiz kid did come up with a national testing and tracing plan. They came up with one. They had it all on paper, ready to go to the president. He was ready to receive it. Apparently, this was going to happen in the early part of April. They had a meeting, and somebody brought up the fact, hey, you know, this is only hitting the blue states. Maybe we ought to just let this thing run its course. We don't need a national plan. Let the Democratic governors take the blame for the coronavirus. And Jared went, you know what? That's a hell of a good political decision.
Let me read.
Let's do that.
I want to read this quote. I want to read this a segment of the report that you're talking about is from it's written up in Vanity Fair. Sorry. And let me just read from that, because this is the kind of stuff that in a functioning democracy, this guy is maybe brought up in charges after, you know, the election for this type of stuff. Against that background, the prospect of launching a large scale national plan was losing favor. They have developed this plan. And let's be honest. You know, the plan that they're talking about is, I'm not convinced that, you know, you and I and Matt and Brendan and Jamie could get into a room and we would come up with more or less the same plan, right? This is not rocket science. You need to have accounting for this. You need to be able to turn these things around quickly. You need to develop some contact tracing. It's stuff that everybody's been saying. It's like, why haven't we been doing this? Well, they came up with this plan. Here's the plan. The plan called for the federal government to coordinate distribution of test kits so they could be surged to heavily affected areas, oversee a national contact tracing infrastructure. Very obvious stuff. Yes. You have a central clearinghouse in the federal government. they have the data to say like, oh, we're going to need this in Kentucky because we're starting to see, you know, an uptick here, whatever it is. It also proposed lifting contract restrictions on where doctors and hospitals send tests, allowing any laboratory with capacity to test any sample. It proposed a massive scale up of antibody testing to facilitate a return to work. Called for mandating that all COVID-19 test results from any kind of testing taking anywhere be reported to a national repository as well to state and local health departments. So you could assess, like, are these tests accurate? Where, you know, like everybody's got to share this information. It all, and they wanted a national sentinel surveillance system, which would allow real-time capability to see where things are surging, right? This is all sort of like obvious stuff. But then the White House was like, we don't want to test. We're nervous about testing. So against that background of the White House being reluctant, the prospect of launching a large-scale national plan was losing favor, said one public health expert in frequent contact with the White House's official coronavirus task force. Most troubling of all, perhaps, was a sentiment the expert said a member of Kushner's team expressed, that because the virus had hit blue states hardest, a national plan was unnecessary and would not make sense politically. The political folks believe that because it was going to be relegated to Democratic states, man, that they could blame those governors and that would be an effective political strategy, said the expert. That's a quote. That logic may have swayed Kushner. Quote, it was very clear that Jared was ultimately the decision maker as to what plan was going to come out, the expert said. Just for context, to understand what that means, let's play this clip. I think you and I have played this clip multiple times from Pam Carlin when she was testifying in front of the Judiciary Committee that was looking into impeachment. Back, I guess, in maybe December or January. Here is Pam Carlin testifying. And this is what we're looking at.
What happened in 2016 was bad enough. There is widespread agreement that Russian operatives intervened to manipulate our political process. But that distortion is magnified if a sitting president abuses the powers of his office actually to invite foreign intervention. To see why, imagine living in a part of Louisiana or Texas that's prone to devastating hurricanes and flooding. What would you think if you lived there and your governor asked for a meeting with the president to discuss getting disaster aid that Congress has provided for? What would you think if that president said, I would like you to do us a favor. I'll meet with you. And I'll send the disaster relief once you brand my opponent a criminal. Wouldn't you know in your
all
gut
right, that's it. That's such all, a I mean, president... That dynamic is what we're looking at, right? They're not going to provide a national testing strategy because they think this is hurting blue state governors. This is nuts.
It is nuts. And it's just, you know, and by the way, it wasn't just the White House that was doing this. Remember Mitch McConnell at the time, they were talking about doing aid to states and cities. And one of his aides put out a whole plan. And I think McConnell actually, you know, said this at some, you know, function that he was at, that they weren't going to do a, quote, blue state bailout, meaning that, you know, they weren't going to, they thought that the virus, these people were living in this dream world, I guess, where they thought that the virus was only going to attack Democrats, and that was good for them. So they didn't want to bail out any states. They didn't want to do testing in blue states. They didn't want to have a national response and, you know, somehow make it look like this was a problem that they had some responsibility for. I mean, this was going on all through the spring. You can just see how that whole through line of these political considerations were happening. And what it depended on was a couple of things. Yeah, Deborah Birx there, this was reported in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago. During that period that we're talking about, late March and early April, Deborah Birx was running around with this, you know, pie in the sky, optimistic model that was showing the virus was going away and it was going to go away. Now, this woman, you know, she's the doctor. She was highly respected as a scientist. I don't know why she adopted this particular model. Nobody really knows, although I have my suspicions. And she was a member, happy to be a member of Trump's team. So maybe that tells you all you need to know. And she had an office in the West Wing, and she had access to everybody. And she was pushing out this idea that the virus was going away. You know, Trump didn't come up with this on his own. This is something that he heard. And I think we know where he heard it, that it was going to go away someday. And that her model at that time was this optimistic model. Remember, they're saying, oh, 60,000 deaths tops. That was coming from that particular model. And I won't go into why that was. I mean, there's a reason why that model was so optimistic and it was really stupid. But, you know, in any case, that's what he wanted to hear because he was desperate about the economy at the time, particularly the stock market. He was freaking out. He didn't want his numbers to go up. We know that, you know, gosh, you know, they're got to keep my numbers down. So there was that pressure coming from that as well. So they're saying you don't need to do a national testing because it's going away on its own. And you had this blue state political thing. So basically what we're talking about, and I think maybe this kind of crystallizes the entire Trump administration, not just the response to the COVID crisis. There are only two things that they are able to contemplate. Punishing their enemies and magical thinking that problems are just going to go away. I mean, this is their entire approach to governing and has been in every way. In terms of the COVID crisis, though, this really, the chickens came home to roost
right
on this particular governing strategy of, you know, because it obviously it doesn't work at all. The virus is a virus. It's not, you know, it's not subject to political considerations, and magical thinking has no effect on it. So they're stuck with this. And, you know, we're just seeing this again. It's as you point out, you know, look, you're still seeing this stupid argument over masks. I mean, I can't believe we're still doing that. It is beyond belief, but this has become some kind of political, you know, totem that, you know, it means something if you don't wear a mask. I don't know, it makes you more of a man or more of a Republican or, I don't know, more of a hero in some way. And it's absolutely ridiculous that we're still arguing about that. And now the virus has surged so out of control. You know, it has this sort of surge where it goes up and then, you know, it starts to peter out as people begin to behave, you know, in a responsible fashion for a while and it goes down. But, you know, there's just the idea that this testing, you know, this national testing program, which I agree with you, who knows if it would have worked. I mean, this is the Trump administration after all, but
right,
even the attempt to do it probably would have been welcome. And I think they would have been seen. This is the part that absolutely astonishes me. They're so stupid about politics that Trump and his cronies did not understand the opportunity they were given to be heroes and to take control of the situation and be seen as these great managers. I mean, this was the whole argument for Trump, right? He's a businessman, you know, Kushner, a businessman. They know how to get things done and blah. They can get the private sector involved and they can do all this stuff. Had they actually done that, even if it wasn't entirely successful, the attempt to do that, the taking control in a positive way rather than, you know, like sending paramilitary troops into cities, taking control in a positive way and saying, look, we're going to get the full force of the federal government, you know, working in all capacities that we can. We'll bring in the private sector. We're going to do this. That he would have helped his reelection chances by doing the thing that he wanted, but because they can only see the politics in terms of punishing their enemies and demanding loyalty of their minions, that's all there is for them. They have no other way, no other window into the way politics works, because they're like, you know, small-minded mob bosses. They're like, you know, Tony Soprano. That they couldn't conceive of that, even in this moment where it could have been a moment of real success, or at least more successful than it's been. Let's put it that way.
Well, they could have projected that. I mean, I think.
No.
I mean, I think. Like, I mean, look at what Andrew Cuomo has done. I mean, Andrew Cuomo made some massive, deadly mistakes. They sent patients to nursing homes, for God's sakes, and yet. Yet he was able to at least politically position himself where to the point where, you know, most people, sadly, as much as I am trying to crack that veneer, perceive him as being successful during this. I mean, honestly, like, you know, at one point you realize like, oh, I screwed up. And, you know, but they have not let go of the idea that we're going to deny this reality exists at the White House. And so let me ask you this in terms of like, you know, they supposedly have suspended their campaign ad buys, and they're, you know, there's a sense that they're going to retool. Who knows? Maybe tomorrow will be the day that Donald Trump finally becomes president. But give me your sense when you see, you know, like when I see Fox News and when I see Bill Barr go up on the Hill and Donald Trump, you know, we need to postpone the election. Now, granted, there was a lot of pushback, I suspect, because a lot of Republicans are like, hey, wait a second. We don't want more time here, because if the time between September and the election is longer, we could lose worse, I think is probably what they're thinking. I mean, that's honestly, like, I mean, time is not in their favor here, because the economy, you know, they just left town yesterday, the Republican Senate did, without dealing with extended unemployment. We're going to have millions of people, tens of millions of people who are going to be subject to eviction within weeks. We're going to have tens of millions of people who are going to suddenly feel a cut of $2,400 a month in what has been providing support for them because they don't have the ability to work. I mean, things are going to go south very quickly. And to add another month, let's say, I mean, all of this is fantastical, but to add another month to the election cycle, I think there's a lot of Republicans out there going like, no, we don't want that. You know, I mean, and it suggests to me that maybe there's been a decision by the sort of like the you know, Republican regulars that maybe it's time to start to distance ourselves a little bit from this. And, you know, think about how we can sabotage Joe Biden. You know what I mean? I mean, like, and I think from the Trump camp, it's more like, how can we just simply say this election's going to be illegitimate?
I agree with you. And I think the first point you made is particularly important. The Republicans from the, you know, it makes zero sense in any normal political, you know, sense that they would not want to work very, very diligently to keep the economy functioning going into an election unless they know they're going to lose it. And basically are instead setting up they're sabotaging the next administration by destroying the economy even worse before the election. I can't think of any other reason why. I mean, we're sitting there with a Congress and a president, and Trump too, ready to sign checks to the American people to get them through the, you know, 3 months before the election. I mean, that's like in the old days, that would have been just manna from heaven, right? I mean, geez, the government's giving out money. Let's get some, right? Let's get some and do it. And then we're in the middle of this terrible crisis, and they know that people are going to be suffering, evicted, as you say, losing. I mean, people are already lining up for food banks. What's it going to be like in October, if this aid is not continued? So it's definitely, that's again another political decision based purely on sort of a punitive, petty, vindictive sort of measure, and that's being done by the Republicans in Congress. They're the ones who are doing this. This isn't even Trump. I think he's so out of it. I think he'll sign whatever they give him. But, you know, so this is what's happening. And I think that's the motivation for them not to want to extend the election, and also trying to, you know, preserve some vestige of, you know, deniability that they were totally in the tank for Trump. I mean, the head of the Federalist Society said that it was fascistic and Trump should be impeached in the New York Times yesterday. So that was something of a shot across the bow, but don't kid yourself. There's a second part of this, which is what Trump concentrated on when they asked him about it yesterday in his coronavirus, you know, rally briefing at the White House. He ignored the delay the election part and went directly to, I don't think the election's legitimate if we don't count all the votes on election night. and really attacked mail-in voting. And, you know, we're seeing them. There was a story yesterday that it's a Trump crony that's in charge of the post office.
Yep.
And he's now instituting all these new rules that are delaying, you know, just normal mail and packages, much less this, you know, great surge of mail that's going to come with the election, which seems obvious. This is just obvious what they're doing. And I know that this is true because my mail has been delayed. I've actually seen this happen. I was wondering, I'm going, what is going on here? Because they've usually been pretty good. It's all tracked, you know, on computers, and you can usually figure out where your packages are and stuff. And suddenly the whole thing's gone kerflooey just in the last couple of weeks. So it's obvious to me that this is what's happening. He cut overtime pay. He cut all these methods that they were using to get the mail on time for an obvious reason. So I think it's clear.
I should add, let me just add one thing.
Now, I don't know where.
Let me just add one thing on that. What they have also done is they have, it used to be that before you went out on your route, they would process some mail. They won't do that now. They've changed that. And there is a lot of self-sabotage going on at the post office, like you say, and there's, I think, a lot of this has been ongoing, right? I mean, this has been an ongoing Republican project since 2006, where they passed the law that basically said the post office, unlike any other entity in existence in the country, government agency, quasi-government agency, private enterprise, they had to pre-fund the retirement benefits 75 years out. That means for people who are not even remotely born yet, they had to pre-fund their retirement benefits as a way of making of crippling the post office, and they're getting gosh darn close to it. Of the many things that will happen if Trump is reelected, the post office, a huge swath of it, will be privatized without a doubt. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, no. And make a point of it that what you said about what they're attempting to do with the election, I think we're at a point where, you know, I heard guys like Byron York yesterday, you know, to some of these right wingers, they were saying, oh no, we can't delay the election, but let's not kid ourselves, the election's going to be rigged. That is the line that Trump is using. He used it the last time, remember? I mean, he was saying he wouldn't accept the election results unless he won back in 2016, and this time he's got this whole thing set up. So basically what he is setting up is a way of invalidating the election results, regardless of how big big the loss is. And I mean, that is really amazing to me, because, you know, you expect that they would do it in a close election. But this one's starting to look like it might not be that close, where they really can't contest it in any normal legal way, right? There's not going to be these small differences in places like Pennsylvania and Michigan and, you know, Wisconsin and that.
Knock on wood.
It could be a pretty big win, knock on wood, but, you know, the polls show that it could be. And so they're setting up, just in case that happens and it's not close, that they're going to have this argument. And, you know, and when you combine that with Bill Barr saying in his, you know, insane appearance before the House Judiciary Committee this week, you know, that he will, quote, follow the law, but, you know, he'll leave office if the results are clear. And, you know, his insistence that sending paramilitaries in to protect federal buildings and federal law, et cetera, kind of assuming a whole lot of different, you know, of jurisdiction that he doesn't actually have, and ignoring jurisdictions that he does have, that, you know, this could be I don't know if Trump's going to refuse to leave office, but I can almost guarantee that from November 4th until he leaves office is going to be a nightmare in this country, because I just cannot see that, even if he concedes, that he really concedes, you know, that this is, and certainly his people, you know, the Boogaloo boys and God knows the Proud Boys and the militias and God knows what else, the people on their boats and the, you know, the Hell's Angels and God knows what else. I mean, these are all heavily armed people. And now you've got, you know, paramilitaries that are working on behalf of him, that on a, you know, an official basis, that, you know, I think that there will be a large number of Americans who will not accept the result. Whether Donald Trump accepts it or not, I don't know. But I can guarantee that there's going to be millions of Americans who won't accept it after listening to this drivel for the last few months. And it's going to continue. And you're right about the advertising. They pulled the advertising because of, quote, messaging. I am really wondering what the new messaging is going to be. But I have a feeling this could be it. That, you know, the election's rigged, it's not right, our system is broken, you
yep.
can't trust anything, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, here
I,
we are.
We're going to find out, I think, in a couple of days. We're going to get a sense of which way they're going to go with this. And I think you're right. I mean, this is, I think there is a sense that they feel they are cornered. And this is the only direction they can move in. We will see. Heather, as yep. always, disturbing and a pleasure. I don't know.
Pleasurably disturbing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I would say that, but I'm glad we had the opportunity. Digby, thanks again.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend.
All right. Bye-bye. You too. All right. We're going to... we take a break, or
I can just bring David on. Actually,
oh, is he on? Do we have him?
Here we go.
Okay.
Here in a second.
Okay, we have him connecting. Just look at that! Wow, he's got a very, very sophisticated setup, ladies and gentlemen. David Feldman. I see that you're connecting to audio. I don't know that we hear you. You don't hear us. He's just shaking his head back and forth.
Yeah, it looks really like his audio won't connect. That's weird.
Yeah, his audio is not connecting. There he is. We get an opportunity to see what David Feldman looks like.
It's like a webcam,
as
yeah.
he is being subjected to technical difficulties. He's just... so just hanging. It's just like a logo that says David Feldman is connecting to audio. He's not yeah. talking. He cannot
hear us. Can you
hear us? No, he cannot. Shit. David, how many fingers am I holding up? How many fingers am I holding up? Can you tell me? How many fingers?
Ah, shoot.
Can you, like... text him or IM him or call him
yeah.
on the phone to maybe drop him and rejoin.
Let's see here.
Why don't you drop yeah. him and see if he can rejoin okay. again? Maybe he's going to go through it. Okay. Good job, David. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. In the meantime, Eric Weinstein, I see, Matt, that you've pointed out the tweet. You've been trained not to listen to Cernovich. Now ask why.
Yeah.
I believe in redemption, and Mike Cernovich has been fighting under incredible odds. This is the first step. Next is asking, why are these names redacted? Is this an issue of national security? If so, was Jeffrey Epstein in IC?
I mean, there's a more pertinent connection to him in the intelligence community, which is that Acosta was told he was intelligence community and to lay off the case. So maybe if right. Weinstein went to better sources for this sort of stuff than Mike Cernovich, he would know that sort of stuff.
Right. I have a lot of reasons why people do not, why you've been, I've been training people not to listen to Mike Cernovich.
Yeah. TrueAnon is a better source if people want to follow this stuff.
Exactly. So are we going to try and get David back?
Yeah, let's see here. Let's try one more time. I'm going to DM.
Here he is. Oh, look at that. Yeah, can we record this? Oh, we are recording, right?
I'm spotlighting you, so...
oh, no. I want to see that. No, do not spotlight me. I want to see him trying to... David, can you hear me?
Damn. No.
He's not hitting the right button.
Yeah. Can you select your mic, David?
David, can you hear us? Can you hear us?
No, shoot.
Can you hear us? Give me the thumbs up if you can hear us.
Damn it.
All right, let's just call on the phone. Brendan, can you call him and tell him to call on the phone?
Okay, I'll put him in the waiting room again. Oh, I was on your show yesterday over Zoom, and it was pretty seamless. So,
oh my God, yeah. Well, no, it's fine when you do his show, but when he wants to come on to, should we just play a video in the meantime? We wait for. People are getting a little bit annoyed, I would imagine. I certainly am. Well, here's Donald Trump. Brendan, can we do this? Can we play this, or are you able to?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, let's play clip number two, and then we'll have Feldman call in on the phone system, right? Mm-hmm. All right, let's play clip number two. This is Donald Trump saying that he really doesn't want to wait for election results. That's too hard on him. Right now, I will say this, that I would imagine news organizations, cable television news, trying to figure out how they're going to handle this. Because there's a lot of reason to believe that we're not going to get the results of an election until days later. And I can tell you, I've been through one of these back in 2020. It is a night, excuse me, the year 2000. It's a nightmare. And it makes things very unstable and potentially, it makes the outcome very, very unpredictable because narratives get built. And then maybe Supreme Courts decide that they're going to interfere in one way or another. But here's Donald Trump.
An election. I'd love to see voter ID. But this is the opposite of voter ID. The Democrats love it. The Republicans hate it. We all agree that absentee voting is good. Mail-in ballots will lead to the greatest fraud. You know, we talk about Russia for 2.5 years, and then they found nothing, and there was nothing. But they talk Russia. They talk China. They talk all of these countries. They say they get involved in our elections. This is easy. You can forge ballots. This is much easier for foreign countries. Go ahead, Steve.
But delaying the election is probably a non-starter. I mean, wouldn't you agree with that?
I just feel I don't want to delay. I want to have the election, but I also don't want to have to wait for 3 months and then find out that the ballots are all missing and the election doesn't mean anything. That's what's going to happen, Steve. That's common sense. And everyone knows it. Smart people know it. Stupid people may not know it. And some people don't want to talk about it.
Oh, my God.
But they know it. And no, we want to have an election where people actually go in. And what's your name? My name is so-and-so. Boom, you signed the book like I've been doing for years. It's very, very unfair to our country. If they do this, our country will be a laughingstock all over the world because everyone knows it doesn't work.
I mean, who's going to tell them? Who's going to tell them about the whole laughingstock thing?
It's pretty amazing that it's going to be common sense that we won't be able to hold an election is like something you can say as president that is a defense of how you should remain president.
Yeah. And like who's the they here? Like who's the they that is doing this? Right. Like, I mean, who's the they, but what first off Russia. Well, all of the investigations, including the Republican led intelligence committee said that Russia interfered in the 2016 election. I don't know if it was determinative or not. There's a lot of things that led to Clinton losing, and about, 15 out of the 16 had to do with her campaign or, maybe some of them are out of her control, whatever. It doesn't matter. But the Russia thing was a finding by the Republican Senate Intelligence Committee. Let's just make that clear. But the idea of it being common sense that it's going to be possible for Russia or anybody else to fraudulently submit these ballots is absurd. We've already talked about that. I mean, here's a guy who's laying the premise for his followers that the election is going to be illegitimate. That is all that's going on there. Period. End of story. Nothing else. I mean, this is, you know, like we have a knee-jerk reaction of like, let's assess this like we are sane, relatively rational, intelligent people and assess it based upon how ridiculous it sounds. I think that's a mistake. I really do. I think it's like people have to move into the mode of like, he's doing something consciously now with that. He knows what he's doing. And he is laying the groundwork. It may be crazy, but he is laying the groundwork to say the results of this election are suspect.
Yeah, and period. It doesn't have to be across, you know, the entire, you know, country. It just has to be a few counties in states where Mitch McConnell has appointed, you know, X number of conservative judges and run it up the ladder of the judiciary.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it is, you know, it is the case that if, you know, they lose Texas and, you know, Arizona and Florida and Ohio, okay, it's going to be much harder to argue. But if it's even, you know, if it's one of those things where there's like two or three states, people just better be just like mentally start to prepare for this stuff. All right. Hopefully we are also mentally prepared to welcome to the program the proprietor of the David Feldman program. That would be David Feldman. David, are you on the line?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I don't know why you were having problems before, but it was fun to watch.
Yes. A man of my youth still being able to figure out how to work Zoom. You seem pissed off today. You kind of negative. Is it okay if I can you use a little healthy criticism?
Sure. I mean, if you feel like that's how you want to start this off, go ahead.
And this comes from a place of love. I mean, you just seem angry, and I'm not sure it's good for the country. I think you need to tell people you're kind, Sam. I think it's important to remind your viewers, your listeners, that you have a big heart and that you're kind, and never squander an opportunity when you're on the show to tell people you're kind, because there are a lot of frightened people right now. You were talking about evictions, homelessness, a cratering economy. Sam, you need to remind people now more than ever that Sam Cedar is kind. You need to dance more, play more games on the show, play more games, dance more, and tell everyone you're kind. We need that.
Right. I see what you're saying. I think. I'm kind, and I will try and be more fun. I mean, you sound like you're describing, you know, someone like, I don't know. I mean, let me ask you this.
Yeah, I listen. Can I just say up front before we get into it, because it's so important, and your listeners, you know, they do, you know, they take the cues from you.
Mm-hmm.
Tell everyone you're kind, even strangers. Walk up to a stranger today and say, "Hi, I'm kind." You'll feel so much better. That's my message to all your followers. Tell everyone you're kind.
But don't you think that maybe being kind is probably better than just saying that I'm kind?
I don't understand what you're saying, I don't understand what that means. Be optimistic too. I'm optimistic. I'm very happy with what's going on. I see nothing but blue skies. And I today, you know, I watched, waiting, and you know, you're just kind of nitpicking.
I'm nitpicking. Well, which part was nitpicking?
You're nitpicking.
I'm nitpicking. Like, because of the unemployment stuff, that was nitpicky.
And the
GDP. And the denying of the testing because it was happening in blue states.
Look, Have you ever been in a bad relationship where the yes. person wants to get out and they're like a coiled snake in the grass, just waiting for you to make one little mistake and then jump on it? That's what I feel you're doing with the situation here.
Well, I guess we may have to agree to disagree. Well, let me ask you this. Okay. This week we saw the pass of Herman Cain. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Well,
I'm optimistic.
I'm not sure I follow. You're optimistic about what? I mean he passed away.
Well, I mean, I heard your interview with Digby. Herman Cain, he died. He accepted the results. He didn't say it was rigged. He died and he accepted it.
Well, I mean,
why can't you?
How
he's a Republican, and he accepted that he's dead.
That's true.
And I think all the Republicans have accepted that he's dead. And you're talking about rigging, you know, refusal to deal with science and all this negativity. Nobody's saying Herman Cain isn't dead. And so this is a good thing. You know, it's sad that he's died, but I think Herman's death will serve as a wake-up call for Republicans like Herman Cain. I think this, they're all going to admit that the science is there and that, you know, you can't gather in public places not wearing a mask. I think Herman Cain learned his lesson. I think he has the introspection to say, you know what? I was wrong. I didn't wear a mask. Now I'm dead. From now on, I wear a mask. I think people like Herman Cain can be moved to say, I'm dead, I'll wear a mask. And unlike you, Sam, I think that's good for the country. I'm not a Republican. I'm not. But I think they are capable of introspection.
Well, no, wait a second. Now, wait a second. I got to take a little issue because I find it hard to believe that Herman Cain is going to be introspective now that he's dead. A. And B, I would say that Louis Gohmert, who was also diagnosed with COVID this week, was anything but introspective. In fact, he not only did not reassess his decision, his attitude towards masks, he started to blame masks for maybe why he got it.
Okay. All right. Look, again, you need to dial it back. I find your tone of voice a little menacing and threatening, and I don't feel safe. That's the first thing I want to say. But I do want to have a conversation with you about politics, but you really need to dial back the subtext of this conversation. Okay, there is a subtext to this conversation that I find a little disconcerting. Okay,
I think there's multiple subtexts of this conversation that I'm finding disconcerting. To be frank.
Okay. Okay. You know that I'm a Bernie supporter, right?
Of course.
You know.
Yes.
That.
No. I know.
From way back.
Way back.
From where I was there. Okay. But you have to reach across the aisle, and you got to pass legislation. You talk about pragmatism. And you have to, you know, Louis Gohmert. I don't know where you stand politically. I'm sure you and he don't see eye to eye on everything. But you have to admit, he loves this country just as much as I hate it. So that makes him a true patriot. Louis Gohmert loves America as much as I loathe it. And that's a lot. And for you to attack and make fun of Louis Gohmert, I know you're kind. He's an inspiration to even lefties like me. Louis Gohmert, how many of your friends, how many people do you know can be kicked in the head by a mule while still in his mother's womb, get born, get kicked in the head by that same mule again and again and again, and grow up to become a United States congressman? Louis Gohmert is an inspiration to all Americans who keep getting kicked in the head by a mule, and for you to giggle over his health. I mean, it's just unseemly, and that's not how you pass the important legislation that we that we need right now at a time like this. We need kind legislation. We need dancing and games and gifts, giveaways, and dancing and kindness. That's what we need.
Well, now wait a second, dude. I need to take a little issue here. First off, I have not giggled about Louis Gohmert. I mean, I've laughed. I have. I guess I've laughed. I guess I've full on laughed. I haven't quite giggled. But nevertheless, also, we don't need Louis Gohmert to pass any legislation. He is a member of the House. The House has a majority of Democrats. The House has passed many, I think maybe over 100 pieces of legislation, well into the, I'm not sure, but at least dozens of pieces of legislation without Louis Gohmert voting for a single one of those bills. Now, they all died in the Senate, but Louis Gohmert's not in the Senate. So you're wrong on both points.
And do you laugh when those bills die in the Senate? Do you mock those deaths as well? The way you mock the deaths of Republicans?
Listen, look. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No.
Let the anger out. Let the anger out.
I think there's reason for anger to be here. And I'm curious as to how you maintain this sort of like even keel.
Because the sun shines on me. Chris Matthews always talked about certain political types who always seem to walk in the sun. And I have a sunny disposition. And, you know, I'm not as smart as you. I'm just a small town country Jew. And, you know, we have to listen. We have to listen to the other side. Louis Gohmert.
David, where did you grow up?
In a small town, very small town.
Name?
Very small town.
What was the name of the place that you grew up?
It was a small town, Greenwich, Connecticut. I had to share a floor with my maid. Are we allowed to call them maids? But it was, you know, I know what these people go through because I lived on the third floor with my maid, and
you were in the maid quarters wing of the house.
Yeah, okay. And my bathroom was right up against hers.
Right.
And, you know, so I know, anyway, that's not the point, Sam. Louis Gohmert, we need to listen to the other side. And he said something interesting about his COVID-19. He blamed his COVID-19 on what?
Masks.
You even listen?
Yes, huh? Masks.
Good for you. See, now, I didn't think somebody like you was capable of listening to the other side. That's how you get, that's bipartisan. And, you know, I'm not a scientist, so I should talk about this. I have noticed. Now, do you have a pen? Maybe
yeah,
you could.
I do.
Maybe you could learn something. Okay. Write this down and do the math. Louis Gohmert says he got the COVID-19 from the mask.
Mm-hmm.
You see what's going on. Have you noticed that the more you see people wearing masks, the more of a spike you see in COVID-19? Do you understand cause and relationship?
I do. I don't think that's exactly what you're talking about.
Everyone is wearing a mask, even the president. And what happens? More COVID-19.
Right. I don't think that's the sequence I don't think you've got the sequence correct, David. But listen, I don't want to haggle over this. One of the things I actually wanted to talk about was in light of, you know, Louis Gohmert apparently not telling his staff that he had COVID, in light of the fact that Robert O'Brien, I think it is, the NASA security advisor, not telling his staff that he had it. I've got to say that I've heard of similar dynamics around the David Feldman show. Now, this was not something I was going to get into because I didn't want to get into a hostile, disposition with you, but you seem to sense that there is one anyway, so I thought I'd bring it up.
I didn't think I was going to be ambushed on your show. I thought this was good. Boy, you really do. I don't know what's going on over there, but you are. Yeah, about two dozen former employees who range from longtime senior level executives on my show to production assistants to the kids I keep in cages. They have stepped forward to imply that there's a toxic work environment on my show. Mm. And I'm listening. I am listening to them. I think it's important to listen.
How much are you taking this to heart? I mean, you're listening, but are you will you share with us what they're talking about in terms of this?
I'd rather not.
Well, like, no, I know you would rather not.
I wouldn't ask you.
I got to be honest with you. Nobody has made such complaints.
Yeah, I know, but I heard something happened on your show that I'm not asking about, but
like what?
You know, I don't know. People were crying. I don't really know. A lot of crying, a lot of weeping going on at your show.
Yeah,
deep crying, sadness. But I don't ask. It's none of my business.
Right.
Going on.
Well,
Very sad, crying people. Nonstop for about 10 days.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about me. I've been accused of being handsy. And now I'm of a generation. I'm older than you, so maybe I am handsy. Looking back at my, and I'm listening at my behavior, I now realize perhaps I'm handsy. It's sneaking up behind one of my employees and wrapping my fingers around his or her neck and constricting the flow of oxygen to their brain because they were wearing sneakers to the office. I now, in retrospect, realize that that could be misconstrued as handsy, and I'm listening. I'm listening.
And what are you going to do about it? I mean, what you're describing is you're attempting to choke one of your employees.
No. Handsy. That is being, hang on, choke. See?
Well, you're being chokesy. You're being a little bit chokesy, if you will.
Chokesy.
Yeah.
You're accusing me of being chokesy. My generation, I'm older than you, we call it handsy. And when you say chokesy, I take offense because there was never anything sexual in nature when I did that. There was it was handsy, not chokesy. There was nothing sexual in that. And I hate the implication. I think you've crossed a line with me to say that that was purely intended to restrict the flow of oxygen to the brain so that they would get the message not to wear sneakers to the office. And for you to say that that's chokesy.
I mean,
Jesus.
It's almost like definitionally chokesy. I'm curious as to if that's not chokesy, what would be considered chokesy in your mind?
Because I was not aroused by this. If it were chokesy, there would be, you know, flowers sent afterwards and money exchanged.
Right.
This was purely about enforcing workplace dress codes. No sneakers in the office. Now, if that, you know, looking back, I am listening and I'm going to, you know, reevaluate how I interact with the people who make eye contact with me, even though they've been told specifically, don't look at me in the eyes. I don't know why that's so hard for people who pay to understand, don't look at me in the eyes, or go home and take a shower or have a breath mint. And these are things that in order for me to be an artist, and you know, I'm kind, you know that I'm kind.
Well, you've said that.
Yeah. How am I going to be kind if people are looking at me in the eyes?
David, let me ask you this. You say that you have listened and you are contemplating, like, what do you think you're going to do differently now? I mean, are you going to continue to restrict the ability for people to get oxygen to their brains if they are not wearing the proper footwear?
Okay, now I feel you're trivializing my identity and my struggle. That question is really, I've been through a lot, and I've been brave. And for you to ask that kind of question just dismisses decades of my work with my identity. And I really think you've crossed a line here. I mean, I came on, and you're just looking to humiliate me. And why would you bring up my identity?
I'm afraid I don't think I did, David.
Oh, now you're erasing my identity. You're just saying my. Oh, okay, I get it. Now you've just erased all memory of my identity. Okay, fine. You've revealed who you are, Sam, and it says a lot.
But by referencing your identity, is it because I used your name when I addressed you? Would you feel better if I asked that question without saying David?
I think you need to look in the mirror and question some of your preconceived notions about my identity.
Well, I'll just call you. Would you prefer if I just called you Feldman?
There you go. Okay, fine. Moving on. Let's change the subject, Sam, because I think you're digging a hole.
All right.
I think
you want to change the subject?
And if you dig any deeper, you're going to strike a sweatshop in China, if you dig any deeper.
I'm going to ignore that comment. Were there things in the news this week, David, that you wanted to discuss beyond the fact that you think that, you're dealing with your own accusations of trying to restrict the blood flow to people's brains because of footwear? Bill Barr, have you been paying attention to the news?
Yes. And I think that people should limit their social gatherings to 50, unless you kind of think the other 20 are, you know, clear. Wear a mask when you can. And, try not to share a joint with somebody. You know, stay at least, 5 inches away from strangers. And
are you social distancing? I mean, in the past, I've spoken to you. You said you were social distancing. Have you been social distancing?
I go to parties. I believe in freedom. I'm a people person. I'm a lefty, and we're social animals, and I just sometimes worry that the cure could be worse than the disease. So it's a balancing act, and I just people need to be smart. People need to be smart right now. We need to think and stay 6 inches away from strangers. And don't spit in other people's mouths. You know, that whole thing where we used to walk up to people and say, "Hi, how are you?" I find handshakes are much safer in this age of COVID. In my culture, I've abandoned some of my
habits. Do recall that was your sort of methodology. But the spitting thing is a cultural thing, and maybe you should be a little more sensitive.
I have told the people in my culture that yes, it's a sign of affection to when you see somebody, especially somebody you don't know, to spit in their mouth. And I've told the people of my identity to go to shaking hands, to learn how to shake hands.
Would you like be more specific on your identity? I'm curious.
Oh my God, that is a question. I think That is a question that is inappropriate to ask what my identity is. I mean, that is, you've crossed the line there. I have an identity, and I want it respected, and I want you to be fearful around me and watch every word you say.
Well, I do that anyways, David. I also am nervous about the spitting, frankly, when I'm around you, to be honest.
But that's a cultural. So you don't respect my culture.
No, I do respect your culture. I just don't want your saliva in my mouth.
But that's what we do. And we are dialing it back. But if you tell me that you're offended by it or you think that it's not right, then I feel that maybe I should go back to spitting in people's mouths to make a statement so my culture doesn't get erased.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Dave,
I think you need to think a lot about how you interact with people like me.
Yeah.
And I think you need to listen. I think you need to listen and be optimistic and kind. Tell people you're kind.
I'm going to tell people I'm kind. I am going to definitely give some serious thought about interacting with you. I can promise you that.
Okay.
Serious thought.
All right.
Well, David,
I did it. Thank you. You know what? In all seriousness, I'm being serious now. I didn't know whether or not I could come back. I'm being David Feldman now.
Okay.
Yeah. In all seriousness, I have never, ever, since I've been doing my show, I was getting emails about him, and it was unbelievable. And I just, in all seriousness, I want to thank you for introducing me to him. And I wouldn't have been able to. Thank you.
Well, I can tell you that I don't know if we have have had a guest on that Michael got more excited about. Then well, probably a couple, but certainly you were up there.
Yeah. Last time I said, I am not going to bail on the bit. I'm going to commit to it.
You got all the way through it. You got all the way through it.
Yeah, I got all. You deserve credit for, introducing him to me, and thank you for that.
Well, yes, so. I will. I will take credit for introducing you two. Like I say, he.
Okay.
All right. Well, Dave,
can I see my you're keeping one of my kids. Do I get to ever see my 24-year-old daughter? Or is that just...
I don't know what you're talking about now.
When does this end? When do I get my... I'd like to see my daughter.
Well, I am not responsible for what the authorities have decided in regards to your children, David. I'm not.
Okay, but you have a big mouth. That's all I'm saying.
David Feldman, always a pleasure, man. I'll talk to you soon.
I want to see my kids.
Goodbye, David.
Why can't you keep your mouth shut, Sam?
Goodbye, David. I'm sorry. I just, goodbye. You know, sometimes you see some atrocities that are going on. David Feldman, ladies and gentlemen, check out the David Feldman.
And remember, nobody likes a snitch.
Right. I know that. I've been told that. I'm sorry. Sometimes you got to sometimes you got to be a mandatory reporter. Goodbye, David. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. David Feldman. All right. We're going to take a quick break and head into the fun half of the program. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget to support justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Get our merch, sign up Listen to the AM Quickie every day, 6-7 minutes. You can find it on YouTube at youtube.com/majorityreportlive. You can find it on any of your podcast streaming devices. You can find it on our app at majorityapp.com. I want to remind you, too, that Blinkist takes the key insights from over 3,000 nonfiction bestsellers in over 27 categories and condenses them down into blinks, which you can read or listen to in just 15 minutes. Blinkist also offers its members exclusive original podcasts from top authors and creative thinkers. Go to Blinkist.com/majorityreport. Start your 7-day free trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership after you realize you need to have the service. You get up to 65% off of audiobooks, yours to keep forever. Check that out. Don't forget, you can find Nomiki's show on YouTube.com, The Nomiki Show, or you can find it on Patreon.com/The Nomiki Show. She did a wonderful tribute to Michael this week with Anna Kasparian. Also, check out The Antifada. Jamie's got a lot of different things in that feed this week. Matt, what's happening on Literary Hangover? And you guys are taking a couple of weeks from TMBS, right? And going to start that up again soon?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to be reforming here a little bit for a couple of weeks. Literary Hangover, I'm probably going to get on Twitch, twitch.tv/literaryhangover. Probably going to get on this weekend to stream for the first time after a while. So subscribe to that, folks. That's where I'll be.
Okay, great. We're going
to
take.
Looks like Jamie is actually just here if she wants to do
okay. Things. Yeah, Jamie, what's happening on the Antifada this week?
Hey, guys. So this week on the Antifada, we have an interview with Wilfred Chan, a contributing writer to The Nation, as well as the Lao San Collective, about the ongoing uprisings and struggles for democracy and democratic rights in Hong Kong. And we thought it was really important to do this episode because it's anytime you have like a quarter of the population out in the streets fighting militarized police, I'd like to understand why they're doing that. So we went over some of the history of Hong Kong as a colonial subject of Britain, as well as the role that Hong Kong has played since being handed over to China. We talk about the various things that set the stage for the umbrella movement and for the uprisings that we're seeing there now. And some of the contradictions involved in this movement, because there are reactionary elements and there are also leftist elements as well. And it has liberatory potential, I believe. So that's up now. Check it out. Patreon.com/TheAntifada. Also, I would encourage people to check out our episode from last week, especially if you're having issues with your landlord or your housing situation, because we had some very, very practical tips, as well as, you know, broader political and economic analysis of the housing crisis and the struggle to organize for tenants' rights with our friend Nate Post Cyborg. So that's up too. Check it out. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Okay. Quick break into the fun half. 646-257-3920. Or you can IM us on the app. We'll be right back after this.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
And the alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back. Back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back?
back DJ Danner B song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danner.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, fuck! Fuck you, reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
A hell of a lot of bang. 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 A hell of a lot of bang.
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black. Black.
When you see Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle. Come on!
Fuck them.
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back. Back. Africans are black. Black. Alpha males are back. Africans are black, black.
Come on!
What? Come on!
What?
Come on!
Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here!
I am a total
pussy, 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 pussy.